Chapter 50. The room was a hutch, but the walls seemed to be well enough insulated, and Joshua wasn't cold. Phyllida Green made him a meal, omelette and french fries and beans, and she had a refrigerator stocked with some kind of local homebrew beer in recycled Coke bottles. The web connection was a bust, but the TV worked well enough. Joshua guessed it was feeding off a signal from some satellite. He channel-surfed, the way he always did when he came back to the datum, if only because it was still pretty much the only place you could do that. "That's the one thing you don't get in the high megas," he said to himself, "a sprained thumb from a TV remote." Most of the output, though, was aging comedy or drama, some of it even dating from before Step Day. There were a few news channels, just the day's headlines delivered by talking heads, with little in the way of field reports. The most interesting stuff was documentaries, even if most of it was pretty crudely made, just a small team and a camera or two burrowing away in the corners of the long earth. Here was a piece on hucksters in Miami West 4, under the eggshell blue thread of a space elevator, selling Stan Berg t-shirts emblazoned with the 11 words of his sermon under the beanstalk. "The only Bible you'll ever need," said one gum-chewing salesman. Here was some kind of self-styled adventurer in a broad-brimmed hat that looked like it had come straight out of some fancy city store, clutching a copy of the Stepper's Guide and bragging about the places he could take you if you only signed up to his Twain-based Long Earth tour business. "In a world on the edge of the Corn Belt, I've explored the bed of a bone-dry Mediterranean. On a world far beyond the gap, I've climbed the flank of the greatest volcano anybody ever found, 1,000 times more powerful even than Yellowstone. 35 million steps from the datum, I've walked the only continent in an entire world, drained by a single river that makes the Mississippi look like a rivulet." "Been there, done that. Actually, I don't have the t-shirt. Next." A documentary on Valhalla. With its grid layout of streets, its industrial zones and parks, the schools and hospitals and shops, and its showpiece central square that has been named Independence Place ever since a bold declaration of autonomy was made here back in 2040, Valhalla has its own history. But as cities go, it is unique. Valhalla is the greatest city of mankind beyond the datum and the low earths. Indeed, the only substantial city in the high megas. And what makes Valhalla unlike any other city in the long earth is that nobody farms anywhere near Valhalla. The citizens of this place inhabit a thick band of worlds to either stepwise side. Worlds which have been kept largely undeveloped, and where people gather fruit from the trees and hunt the big animals. So a population of hunter-gatherers is able to sustain a modern city. This is a way of living that was not possible before stepping. The Valhallans got the best of both worlds. But now there is a kind of wistfulness about the place. Some buildings, even whole districts, are dark, boarded up. Even the bars seem half empty, as if the people are trickling away. On Datum Earth, before Step Day, cities used to be magnets of population. People would drift in from the countryside in search of an easier life. But out in the long earth, it's the opposite. If you can avoid the dirty water and the mosquitoes, living off the land is easy, cheap. In the long earth, people drift away from cities, not into them. Even from the stepper's dream that was Valhalla. Depressed, remembering his father-in-law Jack, firebrand of Valhalla's gentle revolution, Joshua flipped channels. A documentary about the Long Mars, a quarter of a century on from the pioneering expedition by Sally Lindsay and her father. In Australia, we had 40,000 years of civilization before the savages landed. It's not our fault that Captain Cook couldn't see what was in front of his nose. My daughter, you know, her art is to make shields of eucalyptus bark, and she signs them with handprints on the back. You blow the pigment through a straw and leave a shadow. And in European Ice Age caves, you can find stuff that they signed just the same way. In the background, behind the face of the polite middle-aged woman, some kind of kangaroo went past, across a crimson plain. It looked tall, taller than the spacesuited humans around it, and maybe in some adaptation to the lower gravity, it seemed to walk, one step after another, rather than hop. Of course, I wouldn't say we were more advanced than you, not much, but we were settled, we were sophisticated. We were embedded in our landscape, our ecology. We had mapped the continent, not with pictures, but with words and songs. And not only that, we stepped, right from the get-go. There are rock paintings in the low earths that prove it. Stepping for thousands of years, because the outback is sure a useful place to have such a skill. Tens of thousands of years, like it was normal. It was what we did. And then when the rest of you discovered the long earth, the way you discovered Australia, we were there already. No wonder more of us as a percentage went walkabout in the long earth after step day than any other group on the planet. And behind the ruse, standing up from the smooth flatness of the seabed, were a series of dark bands, slender, vertical, black against the purplish sky of this world. Monoliths, five of them. The image was sharp, the inscriptions on their surfaces clear, if utterly strange. Well, now we have Mars, the long Mars, another raw, arid, beautiful landscape, and an unending one. We'll probably spend another 400 centuries singing our way across all of that. Then we'll figure out what to do next. Sleep well, Sally, wherever you are. At last, Joshua found an old movie. A favourite of Lobsang's, The Ballad of Cable Hogue. He was falling asleep before the final reel and dreamed of airship travel. He woke before light. This place no longer felt like Madison. It was too cold. It didn't smell the same. It didn't even smell like the low earth footprints of the town. So drastic had the climate shifts been. There was no traffic noise, but lying there in the dark, without electric light, he heard the unmistakable howl of wolves and a gruff grunting closer by, the clatter of a garbage pail. A bear, maybe? Or just a raccoon? Some said that the wildlife of Canada was migrating south, fleeing advancing glaciers, lynx and moose and caribou. Some claimed you could even see polar bears not far north of Madison, in the worst of the winters. He rolled over and tried to get some more sleep.